In fact, this topic, culture and tradition, it can be very deep topic also. But anyone of you have been to Buddhist country? Put up your hands, please. Anyone of you have been to Buddhist country? Okay. China not yet counted. Okay. Those not yet who have never been to Buddhist country, please put up your hands. Okay, good. Not too many, huh? I'm sure if you go to a place like Thailand, or Burma, or Sri Lanka, you will get a strong sense of the atmosphere, the Buddhist culture, Buddhist tradition. So, in this kind of environment, you don't find very difficult management work. Sometimes you just see so many people, especially Mahadana every year, in around February, usually fall on the 15 days of Chinese New Year. You know? And sometimes a bit different, depends on the calendar. They go by Burmese calendar. These Mahadana occasions, sometimes you have thousands and thousands of people performing Dana to thousands of monks. So it's a big, big occasion. But the strange thing is that sometimes it seems to be a lot of people, it's messy, but people know, they go into the place, they know where to do. Even though there's a need to be organized, you have the monastery need to organize, and where's your stall, where you put your things, you know. But overall, you find, even though there are many people, things happen orderly. And we don't need to have the rehearsal. You know, monks and nuns don't go for rehearsal, walking. No rehearsal. We just go and come according to our seniority. Thousands of people, not messy. You know? And how the monks know how to queue up? It's very strange. But actually, if you understand the rule, it's not difficult. Why? If I want to walk into queue, let's say I'm a latecomer, I come late. I just look. Okay, first in my group. Okay, let's say it's about tradition. Okay, I said, look, who are my seniors? Who are my junior? Okay, if I know I see a junior, I know I must be ahead of him. If I see a senior, I know I must be behind. So in between, there may be two or three persons, which may be unfamiliar faces. Then I will go and ask, what is your upasampada date? Okay, how many vasa? Then from there, we decide where we will stand. Then it's in the long queue. Thousands of people, you know where to recognize, where to queue up. You know? Very wonderful. So this is what we mean by the power of culture. When you have a culture tradition, you don't need to pin, oh, you're number one. No need. Everyone knows where you stand. Very easy. So this is just one small example to show that, when tradition, it has a power like that. So it saves a lot of organizing work. A lot of organizing work is saved. Some places I went, for example, like Mahayana background, they also have their tradition and culture. But they do more management work. They do more management work. And usually where you sit, they have to put a number and then tell you where's the number, you sit according to your numbering. That's also good. And one time I was teaching in Taipei, the Taoyuan. I say, can't we change? Today I want to change something. I want to come. He said, Bante, this is very difficult to change. We have worked so hard to put you all in the right position, and if you shift a little bit, a lot of work, a lot of messy things. Then I was start wondering, this thing never happened in Burma. In Burma, we can change it anyway, easily. Sometimes the teacher just change on the spot. But you don't find messy things. You know, people can just accept and adjust according to the, on the spot when the teacher says, no, this is not suitable, go over there, this go over there. Immediately, it's adjusted, and no, not messy. And everyone accept and follow instruction very well. And no complaints from anybody. This is the wonder. in that place. So, as far as I understand, in the Buddhist community, as a monk and nun, we never went through any rehearsal. No rehearsal for any big events, program, no. Let the people do, they just arrange. And on that day, particular day, everything will fall into the right place. No rehearsal. There's no long meeting in the night, no. Just decide the meeting, finish. Then I start to appreciate. Even though at the beginning we thought, oh, this is not like modern place where, you know, people are messy, they don't, you know, everything. Sometimes they don't even really do the work, the queuing or whatever. But they don't push around. You don't see people pushing each other, scrambling or pushing. No. This is a good culture, good tradition. Tradition has the power to protect and save a lot of energy. That's why sometimes, if it is not too big thing, we shouldn't change tradition. Unless it is very, very clear, certain tradition is wrong and harmful, then maybe it is worth the effort to make a revolution. Otherwise, most of the time, we stick to the tradition, we save a lot of energy. That's it. Okay. Then one of the culture important for Dharma leadership is leadership culture. Leadership culture. Now I'm just quoting certain leadership culture, but not to say it's perfect, not to say we can't do better, but certain leadership culture works very, very well in certain environment and it serves a long way. For example, in Burma, you don't see students going against the teacher. Well, you may say it's authoritarian. No, the teacher don't never beat people, never punish anybody. But it is natural authority. Because the tradition respect the siado, respect the teacher. In Thailand, they respect the achan. So, what they do? I don't see Burmese, rarely you find Burmese going against their teacher. No, rarely. Why? The teacher knows better. In most of the case, the teacher knows better. But at the same time, you don't find blind authority in Buddhist world. You don't find that, even though we bow to teacher, everybody. But our teacher lead us by example and with the Dhamma Vinaya. Whenever we have any question, you see the teacher, sometimes we quote the text, we quote the books, and tell you, this is the text given, this is the books. We follow. So because of that, the management is very simple. You may say it's a human management, you know. But it works very well. Works very well. So, why we bring out this Dhamma leadership and we try to create system in our organization? One reason is that in Tusita, when I started that, it was because I wanted to go away. I wanted to leave because I don't want to live forever. I want to be a yogi. It is my initial purpose to become a monk. I want to be a yogi. I only want to meditate. I didn't aim to be a teacher, but I end up as a teacher. So, and as a teacher, you always have to make decisions. You have to lead. You always have to advise. You have to give directions. It is a lot of side duties to our main cause, our main work as a monk. We don't like to do that, but we end up doing it. We have to do because people listen to us, they don't listen to other lay people and lay leaders. They only want to listen to us. Then what can we do? When people only want to listen to us, then it actually is our burden. We have a lot of work to do. So that's why I brought up this Dhamma leadership, and hopefully we have a system, then everyone stick to that system and not try to change. Then after that, things, how decision is made, then in our absence, things can run well. So in this leadership culture, we look at a Buddhist country. They save a lot of trouble. It's very easy for them to move on because the culture already get imbued into the society. So you look at this. First is the power of role model. In the Buddhist country, you know, if it's a person is well-trained in sila, samadhi, panya, usually such a person is always well-respected. Well-respected. So people will follow the model. Especially you find in Burma or in Sri Lanka, they don't need to talk much. The teacher, they will just do. And then the students, usually because of the sense of moral shame, naturally they will copy the example. They see how the teacher regards the teacher, how the teacher regards the elders. Then they will know how they should regard the teacher. So I don't find a lot of talking about leadership. I don't find a lot of talking about things, but everything falls into place, and the newcomers will follow the old person's model, and things like that. Because in the traditional world, in the traditional society, it is considered impolite, you know, inappropriate, if you see your elders doing something and you don't follow. That is the thing. That's why in the Buddhist culture, it's very easy to lead. You see how Venerable Aryadhamma Mahathera, how he conduct himself, and everyone follow. Even sweeping the ground, they follow the teacher's way. The style, you know, they did exactly. Right or not? Sweep the ground also with good pattern, very beautifully. You know, very wonderful. So the power of role model. In a culture which they respect role model, they admire role model, they will follow without saying. So the leadership by example is very powerful. It's very powerful. Also the role model is also usually good, much better than we do, as than we are. Then they are very good role model. And also the students' attitude. They will observe and then they will follow. Instead of they don't need to be told. In fact, in Sri Lanka, I noticed that, or in Burma, when the teacher have certain inclination, then the student, they will know what to do. A lot of things go without saying, without words. This is the power of Buddhist culture. But in the modern society, people like to be unique. I like to be different from you. Okay, so what? You do your your example is your example. I'm not going to follow you. So that kind of attitude make leadership become something more difficult. It becomes something that need to be convinced. Something you need to have the persuasive power to be a leader. That you can persuade others to follow certain direction and ways. But in the Buddhist culture, when the leader walk that direction, everyone will follow. When the leader stand up and will get up and start walking, everyone follow. There's no waiting. You don't wait to be called. You don't wait to be informed. You don't wait to be reminded. I had one experience with Bandi Aryadhamma. He taught me well. He taught me. Huh? Because at that time, I also didn't know. I came from a modern society. Okay, well, if it's a time to go, I wait to be told. I learned a lesson. I was with him. Huh? He was in the minister's house or something, and wanted to leave. Then I was still not aware, you know. Then actually nobody tell. The strange thing is, to me, I felt, nobody tell me to move. But he just walked. He didn't call anybody. He just walked towards the car. And the driver, because he walked towards the car, driver, everything get into place and prepare. Then suddenly I realized I was left behind. He was waiting on the car. Then I said, I have to quickly go. Then next time, no more next time. I realized that, you know, next time you just have to check with your teacher or stay beside and keep yourself alert. And whenever he moves, yeah, you don't let him wait for you. Yeah, they're like that. They don't talk and they don't scold you. They don't tell you. They see whether you will learn the first time, then the second time whether you learn by yourself. If you don't learn by yourself, then you're considered very poor. So this power of role model, in order for power of role model to take effect in Dharma leadership, if we can bring out a culture that no need a lot of persuasion, if the leader shows the way, the teacher shows the way, everyone follow. If that kind of respect, as the Buddha suggested, that we have to respect the elders, things like that, then we don't need these kind of things. Very simple. So in a Buddhist country, it's very, very simple. Which had that culture, which came down through many, many centuries. And probably model shaped by the arahants. So it became very easy. That's a blessing of the ancient masters to this day. So, in a modern society, the modern way of leadership requires the power of persuasion, the power of to convince. But I think this is necessary definitely for the pioneers. But if we can, once we shape the culture, then in future, monks and nuns can only focus on teaching. You see, it is a pity that sometimes certain monks, certain nuns, they are very good in teaching, they are very good in the practice, but they cannot function fully to lead a community because they lack the leadership. But in a culture like Buddhist country, the need for skillfulness is not so much. Not so much. The need for skillfulness is not so much. Then it is just you need to have the Dhamma and you have the substance to share. That's enough. That's enough. So if we can shape such a culture, then it will be very advantageous for the community. You can avail yourself. You can have many good teachers. Even though the teachers may not be good in persuasion, may not be good in leadership. But that teacher can teach and students can benefit. How nice it is. Because from my experience in the spiritual community, I've seen many, many good people, good practitioners, capable persons. Because they put all their heart in the Dharma practice. And sometimes they were brought up in a monastic atmosphere from childhood. So because of that, they may not be so good in their human touch with the outside world. But they are great teachers. They are far better than we do. Yeah. They are more capable in the Dharma. They have more profound wisdom. But because of the modern people, they lack that culture. So they need to be convinced, they need to be persuaded. So such teacher cannot function very well as a teacher. So it is a pity. So if we can shape a culture from the beginning of our sasana work, how nice it is. So this is important. So when we talk about the power of role model, not only that the person who the leaders have tried to live up to a good Dharma role model, but it is also good that we have the culture to emulate role model and no need to be told for each and everything. We will follow and emulate the good example shown by our teacher. So this is the idea, first thing. Then the power of a spiritual leader, yes, this is a bit similar, but here in this case, we emphasize the spiritual leader, then because of the Dharma power and being capable to lead. And in some places, because of the leadership atmosphere and culture is very strong, so from generation to generation, people naturally develop that kind of leadership qualities. This is the thing. These two are a bit similar, they have a similarity. Then the third one, the conservative power of tradition. conservative power of tradition. There are many traditions. For example, we have our tradition of paying respect. We have a tradition of not to simply change things, things like that. And then to be conservative. So these are the quality which keep things intact. So when everyone behave and stick to a certain conservative line of conduct, and then not to overstep and not to do something, create something. Because the path towards liberation is always the ancient path. You don't need to be innovative. Frankly speaking, we don't need to be innovative for liberation. In fact, it is a change which is danger, is risky. If we can keep, just stick to the original way, then the path towards liberation is assured, is protected. So why should we create something new? That is why sometimes I quite disagree with the PhD system of education in for the spiritual world. So for PhD, sometimes they have to write a thesis. You have to write something to show your difference in insight into certain subject. So for that title, it is a pity. People, in order to earn that title, they have to write something new. So a lot of these theses, PhD theses, may not be helpful for the Buddha Sasana. In Burma, they don't do like that. In Burma, the Abhivangsa, in order to get the Abhivangsa, they just make sure whether you are very, you really master the, you know the master's teaching. That's all. You don't need to create new things. You don't need to change. You stick to the same. So this is the thing. So that's why things, the teaching become well preserved, because of that. And then a balance between individualism and groupism. What I mean by groupism is like, as a thinking from the point of community, give priority to the community. Individualism, give priority to individual. In fact, this should not conflict. I don't find it conflicting. I don't find it conflicting. In fact, in the Buddha's teaching, we also care for individualism. That is why the Buddha say, if you don't get the right company to walk along you, which can help you to enhance your progress in the Dharma, then forget it. Walk alone like a rhinoceros. This shows how important the Buddha care about individualism. Because Nibbana is always lonely. You have to go alone. There's no such thing as I hold hands in hands, we jump into Nibbana together. There's no such thing. Even you may be beloved ones, husband and wife, when you walk towards the Nibbana, it's very much individual within. But at the same time, we also emphasize a lot on sacrificing our individual desire to fit the group. There's no conflict in this. On substantial things, on your choice of your path, on your liberation, the Buddha emphasized individualism. Let no one sacrifice his welfare for anybody. There's no such thing. You must search for your welfare. But at the same time, in the sutta, you know, not the Gosinga Sutta, the Buddha praised Venerable Anuruddha, Venerable Kimbila, Venerable Nandiya. Praise them. Because when Venerable Anuruddha explained why three of them practice in a united and harmonious way, then Venerable Anuruddha explained to the Buddha, because all of us are thinking like this. We think, let me do what my friends are happy, they like, and not what I like. I do what my friends like. I don't do what I like. So when they, all three of them, think alike, they become very united, very harmonious. Very, very harmonious. So, of course, later the best part of the story is that at the end, after the Buddha left, Then the other two brothers, Kimbila and Nandiya, asked Venerable Aniruddha, you answer a lot of things to the Buddha on our behalf. You explain to the Buddha that, you know, that we all got fully enlightened and we think like that. Huh? Did we ever tell you that? Then Venerable Aniruddha say, I read your mind, you people's mind, with my mind. And knowing that you have attained, and also the devas have told me, and you have attained, so I explained to the Buddha thus. So you see, when Venerable Aniruddha told the Buddha that we three of us think alike, we want to do what other people like, it's not without basis, because he himself knew how the other two were thinking, because he had the mind reading power. So this is a great thing, sir. But the fact that the Buddha praised them was because it was great. In such a situation, we don't care about individualism. We sacrifice our desire to satisfy our friend so that our friend will be happy. In fact, this is another level of Dharma training, selfless training. That's another level of selfless training. So, sacrificing the individualism in one point is very good. But on another hand, it is also good that if come to the very fundamental, you have to make sure that you really strive. It's no point everyone try to sacrifice for others and no one meditate. Everyone want to help other people to meditate, but no one meditate. Then what's the point? You know, you find this in certain community when they care so much about groupism, they care so much about selflessness and sacrifice, to the point that when everyone sacrifice, no one benefit, no one meditate, no one realize the Dhamma. So this is also not effective. This is also not the point in Dhamma leadership. So this is very important. So, So this reminds me of just now the football, the soccer team culture. You see or not? At times it is time for you to score, you should score. But at times it is time to assist, you should assist. So if you are selfless, you naturally will know how to perform. When is the time to move forward? When is the time to give way to others naturally in order to optimize the community. Okay? So, this is about leadership culture. Okay.